Hello and welcome back to another episode of Out of the Hourglass. I'm your podcast host, Molly Nolan, and I'm bringing back Catherine Freeman. Catherine is a director of operations and senior business coach here at Nolan Consulting Group. If you've been listening to Out of the Hourglass for a while, you have heard her voice. She has covered a multitude of topics, and today I've asked her to talk about creating your career pathway. This continues on a conversation on recruiting for the trades, about getting more people to be aware of the opportunities. And once you're in an organization, how do you grow? How do you take it to the next level? What are the opportunities to build your skills? We've seen success stories. Catherine is passionate about this topic. I think you'll enjoy. Let us get going and welcome back Catherine to the podcast. How are we doing this morning, Catherine?
Oh, it's great. What a beautiful sunny day it is today. It's good energy in the office. Gotta love it.
Are you feeling like spring is coming?
Yes. It was cold, though, and snowy. I mean, I appreciate that. I think that's why I moved to the greater Northeast, is because you get all of the seasons.
You do.
You do. I like that.
I know. I actually would struggle to live in a place with no seasons.
I know.
As nice as those places are when I'm there, part of me craves that change.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the meat of today's conversation. And the topic today is one that kind of carries on from some conversations that I have had with both Classit and Bring Back the Trades, and talking about recruiting for the trades, bringing this career back, you know, back into the mindset that there's a lot of opportunities. And with that, it's okay if there's opportunities. Well, then how can we advance in those opportunities?
Right.
If you're somebody that is looking for, a new job, and this is, you know, whatever trades industry it might be, and say, I have got some hard skills, but I want to do more than just, you know, dig the holes or put the paint on the walls, or I want to become an estimator. I want to become an operations manager. I want to be a resource coordinator. There are certain skills that are required for those. And if you don't have them right now, that's okay. We know
right.
that there's ways to advance that. So this podcast is for, I think it's twofold. It's for those people out there who are looking for ways to advance their career within the trade space. It's also for business owners and managers of these individuals who help lead them to that water.
Right.
Give them the tools to right. be able to, if you have those individual conversations.
Right.
Which have to happen.
They do. They really do. I mean, that's the core, isn't it?
The core. Then we can help give them the tools and resources to get them to where they want. So we just started off with a lot, but that's why we're here.
That's why we're
this
here.
This is yeah. a really, really important topic. So first off, I've asked this question to both Classit and to Steve Turner at Bring Back the Trades, but what do you believe are some of the common misconceptions about working in the trade space?
Well, gosh, I mean, I think there are so many. First of all, I think there's maybe a little bit of my parents sent me to college for this, or right. even parents saying, I sent you to college for this. You know, so there's the what are we saying to people who may have approached higher education? Then there's the next piece of it, which is you've graduated high school. You have to go to college. You have to go to college. You cannot succeed in this world if you don't go to college. So right there are some sort of parental influences that come from years and years and years of us in this sort of post-industrial world and feeling like education is the way that you need to make yourself a better person. And we always think about continuous improvement and education as being necessary to self-improve, but education with the traditional college degree at the end of it maybe isn't exactly what we need right now. So there's certainly some of that. I also think that there's a lot of misconception about your potential wage earning. So much so. I mean, I've actually said this so many times. If I had known when I got out of school what my potential was, I would not have gone into retail. Now, retail was great, gave me some great life skills, gave me some great management skills. When I had young children, it was great because of the hours. Like, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it was good for me. But if I had just been looking at my capacity to pay the bills,
yes,
there would have been a no-brainer. I would have picked up a brush in a heartbeat. And, you know, that's a misconception on my part that, you know, being a painter or a landscaper or a roofer isn't going to help me to pay the bills. And I think that's certainly what we see within the businesses that we coach, mm-hmm. is that most of our owners, I'd venture to say all of our owners, are looking to make sure that they're not just paying a fair wage to their employees, but they're truly getting people who are the cream of the crop in their or in their communities, and so they're paying more than a fair wage. So there's the education component, and then there's the wage component, and
right.
and then there is the last, which you hit on a little bit already, which is if I start as a painter, I'm just going to be a painter for the rest of my life, or if I'm starting as a roofer, that's just what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, and that's certainly not the case in all of the businesses that we work with. There are additional opportunities within that business. You could be an estimator. You could be a salesperson. You could be an operations manager. You could be a controller. You could be, you know, you could, the opportunities are really endless. And I think what is important for me as I'm thinking about this is that, you know, we tie the vision of the business. We tie where we want to go with the people that we have in the organization. And so being able to say in 5 years, in 10 years, in 3 years, I want to be a certain revenue size. I want to add a revenue bucket. I want to add a salesperson. I want to add an operations manager. Now by articulating that, you've given so many chances to the people who are on your team. So it's trifold, I think. It's yeah. trifold, you know?
Well, it's why when we have, you know, new clients work with a coach and do the vision exercise, it's, you know, three years out, it's why we also match it with a three-year organizational chart.
Absolutely.
Because like you just said, we want, if we know we're going to have to fill certain buckets of new roles, new sales rep, whatever it may be, we want the people on our team to know, hey, in 3 years, this is what our team's going to look like. And there's advancement opportunity here for all of you.
Yeah.
And that's part of that cascading down, making sure that the people know what that vision looks like.
Right.
Because how else is someone, how is someone going to know that there's possibility for them in an organization to grow if we're not telling them?
Right.
That someday we're going to need this position filled, and you right. might be a great candidate for it.
Right. And you know what? That communication is also a two-way street, because I think something that, you know, so many of the business owners and leaders in the businesses that we work with, they're busy. They're very, very busy.
Yep.
They often wear multiple hats. Certainly if you're talking about a field leader, they're, you know, putting out fires and watching training, you know, programs for people. I mean, there's just a lot that need to get done. But communication is a two-way street. And so you need to slow down enough to have a conversation with somebody and hear, hey, listen, I'm going to be graduating high school next year, and I don't really know what I'm going to do. And mm-hmm. what do you think I could be doing in a couple of years? You got to slow down for that. And, you know, the thing of it is, you know, a junior in high school or a sophomore in college, I mean, some of these people are, you know, brash and full of themselves. And we might even be a little bit dismissive of like, oh, gosh, like you still have some growing up to do. But if you don't stop and listen to them in the moment and hear that they think you're a great place to be, and, you know, if you're not listening for that and then saying, well, yeah, I mean, maybe you could be a field supervisor in a handful of years. These are the things I think you need to work on, and I'll talk to your supervisor and we'll work out an individual development plan for you. I mean, see how that all ties yeah. together, right?
Well, it's also seeing the potential and being able to bottle that energy that right. someone has that maybe just needs to be refined a little bit. And
yeah.
that comes with experience, that comes with age. You know, take that excitable 17, 18-year-old and help them kind of refine themselves to become a really passionate sales rep or a really right. passionate general manager.
Right, right. Imagine the power of a salesperson going to a client's home and being able to say, oh, yeah, yeah, I've been working for this company since I was in high school. Like,
they helped me get to where I am today. Yeah. Who doesn't love that story?
Who doesn't love
what,
that story?
What customer hears that and is thinking, I don't know about working with that. I mean, that is huge.
It is huge. It's huge. It's huge. And, you know, I think we tend to not listen to those sort of potential stories, or we're maybe a little, like I said before, we're maybe a little dismissive of that kind of enthusiasm. And some of it has to do with, I think, you know, business owners feeling like they've gotten burned before, like they've given somebody a chance and that person left. You know what? People are going to leave.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Turnover in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years in our industries has gotten so much higher, and people, they don't stay if they don't have a reason to stay. Yeah. So if you're not talking to them about their development and talking to them about their opportunities, they'll go someplace where they are having those conversations. So, you know, it's a, what if I talk to them and they leave? They're going to leave. Like, at some point, somebody's going to leave, you know?
And every industry experiences this. We've had similar issues. I mean, no matter what business you work in, turnover is going to happen to some degree.
Yeah.
You're going to invest because you have to invest in new employees.
Yes.
Some you have to invest in a little bit more, and you know that going into it, but recognize this is part of the game.
It is part of the game.
And some are going to succeed and some are not. It's kind of like the concept of, this has come up on a couple of occasions about, you know, customer in our marketing peer group, in a conversation or a podcast I've had with Chuck Winkles about how you treat customers. Customers are the same, but customers are different. You treat them based upon, you know, are they how qualified are they? How good of a customer are they? Same thing with employees.
Oh, yeah.
You invest in your employees that you see success in.
You do. You do. And I think in a lot of cases, we've got, you know, sort of a little bit of a, maybe it's a little bit of a management backlash from, you know, I grew up in a management world where you had to treat everybody exactly the same. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of room. And I think that as a culture piece, you miss the human being that comes in front of you. And so I think we're swinging in the opposite direction. And I think we are recognizing that you do have to look at, you know, if you've got three field employees with three different skill sets and three different approaches to your job, maybe one is a high values fit, but a low performer, and one is a low values fit and a high performer, like, you look at them differently.
You do. And you give them each what they need, but as a result, you are working with them differently.
Yeah, you are. And you know, I think that becomes as a norm, you know, there may still be, I mean, in a business with 100 employees, you're maybe going to ruffle a couple of feathers because you've got an aspiring leaders group or an emerging leaders group, or you have individual development plans for three key people in the field and not for everybody. Maybe you're going to ruffle a couple of feathers, but that's got to be okay, because we're talking about the future and growth of your business, and you have the right conversations in the moment. And if those people with ruffled feathers want to have a conversation with you about their future, have it.
Yeah. Well, this leads me into our next question quite nicely, because you work with many different businesses across the country, across a variety of trades. And so mm-hmm. you're having conversations that are the same but different.
Right.
Understanding, you know, people are working to build their teams and are working through different challenges. You also have done many different individual development plans with people. So working on individuals specifically mm-hmm. on their development. What do you see as the key skills and qualities that individuals exhibit or need to exhibit to really grow their career in general?
Right. I think that there are probably a handful of things that we really look at. I mean, there's a curiosity. Curiosity can be defined a couple of ways. It's, you know, so curiosity about the business, curiosity about the job. But I take it a step back too, and just in general, am I working with somebody, or is a business owner working with somebody who is curious and is interested in learning? Because if we are talking about taking somebody from a field position, maybe to an office position, maybe then to, you know, something that's at a management level, mm-hmm. there does need to be a level of curiosity, because we're going to have to ask them to learn. whether it's taking classes that are formal or taking online classes or doing a little self-knowledge exploration, you need somebody who's curious. I also am looking for a level of engagement, a level of enthusiasm. And that does present itself in different ways. I mean, I think sometimes we look at engagement and we think it has to be somebody with pom-poms and, you know, is constantly jumping up and down and cheering like that.
Totally.
Right, right. But
I'm so excited to be here every day.
Every day, every day. but engagement doesn't look that way across the board. And so a really hard look for you as a business owner or leader, is the person in front of me really interested in the work that we're doing here? Mm-hmm. Do they believe in it? Are they participating in volunteer events? Do they stay an extra 30 minutes at the end of the day to wrap up the phone calls that they had? Are they working the overtime that we offer in the summertime because they know that we need to be getting the jobs done? So I'm looking for that level of engagement.
I'm almost hearing the level of commitment.
Yeah, absolutely.
That they're committed to doing a job well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In whatever fashion that may be.
Yeah.
And whatever job that may be.
Right.
But they're going to see it through.
Right. Right. And that brings up a good point, because something that I don't think we often talk about, but I'm going to add in here, is somebody who's got some relatively good time management skills, because we're talking here about a little bit of a devotion of discretionary time, whether we're saying we need you to do a little bit of self-exploration and that's going to be after hours, or we're saying we're going to continue to keep you in this role, but we're going to give you some projects that we want you to work on. You're still going to have to get your work done. Have to get these projects done. So I'm looking for sort of a baseline of understanding how people's time management skills work. I have seen a number of people who've maybe not been able to make it to that next level because they couldn't get out of their own way. And when I say couldn't get out of their own way, it's not like they weren't interested. It's just that they couldn't figure out how to get the work done.
And that's almost like the first test, right, of those next level roles, where time management is so critical, because you're not just managing your own time now, but you're also managing others on your team and ensuring their time management skills are in place. So that is a kind of a first test of, can you get yourself to that place where then you're able to, I think the word we say sometimes master, but master is not the right word. I think we're never masters of what we do.
No,
we're always working on improvement.
I hope we're not. Yeah.
But it is. It's the first test of, can I do this for myself? Because if that's the role I want, I'm going to have to help others do this as well.
Yeah. And can I hit the project thing too?
Of course.
Because, you know, I often hear people say to me, that their teams are asking for promotions and therefore raises. And I want people engaged in some project work before I'm handing out a promotion. Now, first of all, that's a pretty traditional approach, right? You get a promotion, right? In air quotes, you get a promotion. And so therefore you get a raise. I think certainly with the learning pathways that we've talked about for the last, you know, few years, we've got very clearly defined pay rates by position, so that there shouldn't be that sort of expectation of a raise or a promotion. But I do want an employee to have an opportunity to explore something outside of their world in order to show you as an employer that they've got the capacity to make the right kinds of decisions, right? Think about the levels of work and where somebody is making decisions and how they are making their decisions. And also, how do they problem solve? And what are they looking for? What kind of questions are they asking? Do they take this project and walk away and come back with something that's, you know, incomplete, but they've never checked in with a supervisor about what they're doing? Do they take a project, walk away, come back a week later and say, you know what, I really don't know that I understand this. Maybe you could spend some time with me sort of helping to to flesh it out. Like there's a lot of things that I'm looking for in the project, the output of which may help the business grow. And let's be clear. I don't want to give somebody a stupid make-believe project just to give them a project.
Right.
Like let's make that clear. But I want to understand what this person is sort of going through to get to the answer, in order to make sure that I've got somebody with the right sort of discretion and the right sort of decision-making process, their curiosity, they can ask the right questions. Because a project work is going to tell you more about somebody's capacity and skill than giving them the promotion and then waiting 6 months and seeing, oh, they actually can't do this job.
Now I'm seeing why Catherine assigns all these projects in the office.
Right.
She's just testing us all.
Always. It's one big fat test.
No, but it's good. I mean, to be able to see how the people on your team are going about and preparing for conversations with you, preparing the research that they have found. I'm thinking back to things that my team has worked on, and it makes complete sense as to that being a core part of what we're looking at.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, so that's, I mean, just in terms of a cascading leadership, I mean, that's something that Brian did to me years and years ago. He gave me, there was probably a full year where I went from a project to a project to a project. And, you know, it's probably more of an innate leadership style for him than it is an actual deliberate practice. But I learned that lesson. And so it's not a deliberate practice for me either. I mean, I don't sit in the office and sort of think, but I do say this might be a good project for this person.
Do you say that?
And I'm wanting to think, how could we stretch the boundaries of what they're capable of? I also think, you know, if I think about DISC language for just a moment, that I'm looking at those driving forces when I'm thinking about somebody who's moving from a role to a role in an organization, because I want to understand the driving force that's either altruism or, you know, giving specifically. I can't remember the other one. That's my mistake for not remembering that number, that word right now. But, you know, I'm looking for somebody who sort of has that ability when I'm working with a client to talk about somebody maybe in a field leadership role. Mm-hmm. Do they want to develop people? Do they want to do that? Because there's skills that you need in those kind of roles.
Should we talk about a little bit that, well, I was going to jump to the leadership competencies because that kind of fits into what you were just saying. But before we do that, I want to just say that we talk about these things, you know, sometimes it feels theoretical, but in reality, like, we do see success stories.
We
speak to this so passionately because we do see people taking advantage of these tools and in being committed and being curious and really advancing themselves, not only at the start, the business owners that we work with. So they came into, so many of them liked, and it's kind of what we do, they had the hard skills. They liked doing their trade. It was something that they grew up doing, whether in the family or at a high school. They started working for a business and then had an entrepreneurial spirit and then built something. And to build something, you have to be committed. You have to be curious. You have to learn. So our business owners have really been the success
exactly,
story here.
Exactly.
But the roles now within these companies, I mean, you've worked with a couple of people who you have seen grow from A to B, and it's such a cool thing to look back on.
It really is. And, you know, I think that there are a handful of success stories. I mean, more than that, but a handful of success stories that came to mind. You know, are there people who started in a role? I was just out at Prescott Landscape Professionals, and, you know, they've got a salesperson who started as a field person, became a crew leader, and is now a salesperson. And, you know, that doesn't happen without sort of a two-way conversation, as I said. First, it's somebody who's curious and interested in moving up, and then there's being receptive as a business owner to, hey, there's this person that I hired as, you know, in the field and mm-hmm. wants to do sales, and now I got to figure out a sales training program to put this person through. I mean, like, there's, And we've got a couple of those situations where somebody was hired to work in the field as in a painting contractor and leapt right over being a crew leader and right into a sales role. I mean, there's many of these stories. And, you know, I think it's easy to think about, it's easy to get wrapped up. We talked about turnover easier earlier. It's easy to get wrapped up in the people who you maybe have tapped to do something and they've left. And harder, I think, to remember the people who started. I mean, you know, Nicole Hanick started as an inside operations person. I mean, she's so well respected.
And look at her now.
Look at her now. Yes. So well respected in the entire Summit community. And, you know, so I think it's important for us. Steve Nefranowitz started as an apprentice with Nolan Painting, and he is their CFO. I think it's incumbent upon us to remember that those success stories don't happen without business owners taking a risk and saying, I'm going to have this conversation with you and let's try this, let's try that, let's try this. And, you know, time happens. And
yes, you see what becomes. Well, how important does mentorship or even apprenticeship kind of come into play here?
Well, it's funny, you know, mentorship, I think, is pretty important and something that I think we don't ever really wrap into like our coaching language. Mm-hmm. But I highly recommend that as a sort of a, you know, if you're thinking about an advisory board as a business owner, if you're thinking about what you want to do, a lot of our relationships that we have with our clients are mentoring in many ways.
Very true.
Right. And so if you're saying that, you know, a business owner started out of college with this little, you know, maybe in college painting on the summers or doing landscaping on the summers and then turned it into a full-blown business, like a lot of what got them there was having conversations with people in their community. And so if I'm translating that down to, I've got a roofer that wants to be a salesperson. I'm saying, hey, listen, I want you to talk to this salesperson. Like they've been in the role for a couple of years. I want you to talk to them. And I'm saying to the salesperson, you need to give this kid, you know, 30 minutes of time every couple of weeks, take them out for a cup of coffee, talk to them at the end of the day, share a little bit about your experiences. Mentoring this passing down of wisdom makes us all better, makes the person who's sharing the wisdom better because they have to think about what are the things that I would want somebody new in this role to know. Makes the person who's the mentee better because, of course, they're getting passed on skills instead of just reading a training sheet and thinking this is what it is. So, yeah, mentorship is vital.
Find yourself a mentor.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the programs that we utilize within the Summit program to help that focus on this advancement, that kind of encourage people. I mean, half the battle is what are the tools that you have?
Right.
What are the tools? Other half is, you know, who is helping you? Do you need somebody to coach you through this, or how much can you do, you know, independent learning?
Right.
That's a whole other conversation. You mentioned the learning pathway a little bit earlier. I mean, we talked about this before on these episodes. That's hard skills.
It is.
That is position-based hard skills that if you come in at apprentice level all the way up to, you know, craftsman level in across a variety of trades, you have identified what those skills need to be at each place. And that's a great place to start for someone who's looking to just learn more about the trade, learn more about the skills, and start their growth within the business.
Right. And, you know, I hear a lot of businesses say, oh, it's just so complicated. I don't know where even to start. Start at the apprentice level in your business, in your industry, and build it out. And don't try to get it done. It's wintertime, and I'm going to get it all done by March. Don't try to do that.
Be realistic about the goals that you're setting.
Exactly.
Be smart.
Be smart.
Set smart goals,
but also be smart about it. And don't try to get something done just because it's slow. And the work that you do on a learning pathway for your organization and in your industry will reap benefits, untold benefits, because you can then look at somebody who maybe has management skills from another industry and you can say to them, hey, look at this. We've got a learning pathway. We're going to build you through. We're going to take you from being an unskilled person to being a competent, skilled person, not proficient, not exceptional, but competent in 90 days. Look at what we're going to do. We're going to build these skills. We're going to build those skills. We're going to build those skills. So,
and there's a raise component to that as well.
100%.
Because that is a straightforward position based. This is where you come in at this level. If these are the skills that you have,
right?
So it's black and white.
It is black and white. And just to get a little bit of a tangent there. I mean, I think, you know, so much wage pressure happening in our industries with businesses who need people. See where we started our conversation, right? They need people because there's not a lot of people going into the trades. And so they're willing to pay more. Make it clear so that people are not tempted to go, and make it clear that all they have to do is build up these three skills, get it verified by a crew leader, then they're eligible, and then they don't have to go through the hassle of starting a new job and making new friends. And, you know, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with changing jobs, you know? Who wants to do that?
It's a lot. It's like moving. Once you move, you're like, I don't want to do this again for a long time. Right. Once you get a new job, like, I don't want to do that process again for a long time.
Right. So make it clear and they don't feel tempted to leave. You know, I feel like when I hear a business owner say, I had a couple of guys leave today because they were going to make $1 an hour more down the street. It hurts me because the dollar hour more means that I am not having a business owner communicate well the vision of their business, because a dollar is not worth it to go through all that hassle, especially if we've got a career, a learning pathway that makes it clear that dollar is within a 30-day reach.
Right.
If they just do X, Y, and Z. So it kind of hurts when they say that.
Yeah, I think you have a physical reaction.
I know. I can't. But, you know, I think back to that idea of just start with the learning pathway. Don't think that this is something that you need to get done by next month. But having that then allows you, it's part of your recruiting brand. Yeah. It is a part of the conversation that you can have with people, and you can say there's very, very clear mobility for anybody at any level. All you have to do is put in the work. So start there for sure.
And I have to always remind our clients who are listening, we have these tools to help you get started. We have the learning pathway built out to certain degrees. And so you don't have to start with a blank sheet. We can help you.
Yeah.
So then there's the learning pathways, and then there's the leadership competencies, which is more soft skills training, people leadership, which we all know is very difficult. Managing people is a whole other ballgame. And so you've been working on a leadership competencies program over the last, I'd say, 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Kind of looking at different roles within businesses. Talk to me a little bit about that. One, why you saw the need to create this, but also, two, the process of creating.
So the need to create came out of, you know, my big rock for our planning year is to develop a program for businesses who want to join us, who are interested in rapid growth. And it became clear that as a part of that, we needed to be able to assist business owners in evaluating the people that they had on their team to see if they were the right fit for growth. But also in terms of even just interviewing for, like, we want to be able to understand what is required in a role so that we can ask the right interview questions around it. So if it's not a development of a person in the business, we can interview effectively. Now, you know, this is something it's in tandem work. You know, Nolan Painting had been working on leadership competencies for quite some time. They were focused on field leadership
Okay.
Competencies. And, you know, that is a vital component of the work that I'm doing. But I wanted to take it out because what I hear with businesses is I've got this great bookkeeper and I don't know that this bookkeeper is capable of being a controller. And how do I make sure that this person is capable of being a controller? Or I've got, you know, three people who are crew leaders, and in 2 years, I know that I'm going to need a field manager. Who do I tap? Oh, you know, that's, wow. Like, those are big questions. And I think what I've worked on and what we're continuing to work on, because we want to marry it to the idea of levels of work and what kind of questions and decisions do these roles need to make. But we've worked on identifying skills and competencies that people need to have in order to be in a role. So if you're looking at a bookkeeper and you want this person to be a controller, there are certain things that this person would need to either exhibit or to show within the next 12 to 18 months that they're capable of learning that particular area. So, for example, in the bookkeeper role, a bookkeeper is compliant. A controller may be urgent about compliance. A bookkeeper is making level one decisions, and so they're taking what's in front of them. They're doing the work of the work. They are making sure that it is accurate and complete. A controller, on the other hand, is making level three decisions. And so they're asking questions about those reports. Where does this number come from? Why is it being reported like this? Who maybe is influencing the spend on this report? Where do we need to go in order to make sure that we're making corrections? So now you see we've made some pretty big leaps. And so if you're looking at an employee, a current employee, who wants to move up or you think will need to move up, you can apply that level three sort of approach to where they are. Now, some people are never going to be able to achieve that next level. And I think we have to go into that. You know, that's a crucial conversation to have with somebody. I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing here. I find value in what you do. You're great at your job. You're good culture. I don't think that you're ever going to be capable of doing this. Let's do a couple of projects. Ding, ding. Let's do a couple of projects and see how it is that you do to see if we can't get you to that next level. Just want to make sure that you understand that the projects don't necessarily mean that you're going to get that role. We're going to have to sit down afterwards and see how you did. Mm-hmm. So you do need to be prepared for that difficult conversation with people who might not be ready. And that's sort of what my goal here was, is to give business owners the tools to be able to say to somebody, yeah, we're looking at you and we just don't think that you're the right growth person here.
On the flip side, I feel like you also have to be prepared for those people who you see potential in, but they're okay where they're at.
Right.
Isn't that the radical candor, superstar versus rock star?
Absolutely.
Like, and you need both in a business to succeed.
You do.
So maybe that bookkeeper, you've had that conversation and you know that they have potential to be a controller in 18 to 24 months. But they're like, no, I'm really content.
I'm happy.
I'm really great at my job and this works out really well for my life. And so they're going to be a rock star bookkeeper.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends. And that's okay.
And that's okay. And then you take that next conversation to say, okay, so in 12 months, I'm going to be hiring somebody in who is going to be able to fulfill that role. And you can be open and clear about the fact that, okay, so this bookkeeper may have spent the last 10 years reporting into you, and now you're going to bring somebody in over them.
Yeah, get them warm to that idea.
Exactly.
Because to massage that a little bit.
Oh, you do. That's a big socialization piece. Yeah. And I think the sooner you can, I mean, you're talking about your vision, right? You're talking about the business going from $3 million to $15 million. There's going to be people. Okay, so here's the org chart. I just want to make it clear. You're happy where you are. And I am delighted that you're going to stay because you're great for the business. Mm-hmm. But we're bringing somebody in and you're going to be reporting into them. Just make sure that you're having those conversations. And, you know, that's clarity and expectation. The sooner you can have those conversations, the better the business is and the less sort of internal resentment you might have along the way.
I love that. It's all, at the end of the day, it all comes back to communication.
It does, doesn't it?
Everything that we do comes back to communication.
It does, it really does.
Before we wrap up today, just give us an example of maybe one to two different levels and the competencies that those roles might need to play. And I know you've kind of broken it down into like the level, what level they're at, what are their competencies, the practicum, and then the books that we encourage them to read. So maybe start with, you pick one.
Okay. So I there were two that I sort of fleshed out a little bit. I think when I am looking at, you know, an admin level person in the office, what I want from that person is customer service. I want them to be focused on the person directly in front of them and making that person happy. Whether they're calling in to schedule an appointment or calling in to deliver a material selection or they need to speak with somebody about something. I want customer service to be the most important thing. So I always hear that. Well, I want the person who's answering my phones to be detail-oriented and I want this and I want that. And I'm like, no, they're the face of your business. You want them to be happy and smiling on the phone. You want them to be mostly good about tracking phone numbers.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about somebody who is compliant here. You might sacrifice customer service for compliance. And what we need is for the face of the business to be, you know, cheerful and friendly and open and warm and engaging. Whatever your culture might be, you want it to come across the phone.
Someone who is really compliant and really serious about their job in a sense that their tone is serious.
Yes.
A happy, positive person can be very serious
yes.
in the work that they're doing. But that tone that comes across when you ring that or you answer that phone, that is the make or break sometimes.
Right.
How did that customer feel about calling? Sometimes people are nervous to call anyways. They've maybe never called about this type of job before.
Right.
They've no idea what the expectations are going to be, the process, the budget. They've no idea how much is that going to cost.
Oh my gosh. I mean, some of the new generation of homeowners, they've never had to speak to a person.
No,
ever.
We live in a world of texting on our phone,
right.
being able to submit things online. So it can be big to call up for a new project, one that you're already feeling overwhelmed by because it's maybe broken or you know it's just work that you need done. So if you can be reassuring on the phone and bright and happy and give that person just a level of comfort that, all right, they're going to walk me through this. This is going to be a good relationship, you know, customer business here. I mean, you've already gotten yourself like 10 points towards the sale.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's customer service. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Now, if I take it out like a level or two in terms of promotion, so admin to resource coordinator maybe to an operations manager. Now we're talking somebody who does need to have a level of compliance and they do need to have the ability to track information in a very clear way. Now we're building on skills here. So I might still say, I want somebody who's going to be optimistic. I want them to have a positive interaction with a client. But I'm going to evaluate that administrative assistant who maybe wants to be an operations manager for their potential growth in the compliance area. Now, details are sometimes difficult for people to track. And so then I'm looking for methodologies for people who know that about themselves. They know that they don't track details well. And so what are the things that they put into place to ensure that they don't make mistakes? So you might have that person who started, you know, as an administrative assistant or, you know, maybe you call them an inside salesperson. They're answering your phones and they may be capable of doing that operations manager role, but what are the tools that they've picked up in order to make sure that they are tracking the right kinds of details? Field management is another big one for me because I think in general, we made the mistake of like not focusing on training job leaders and crew leaders, the number of job leaders and crew leaders that we would need to have. So that's a challenge right now. There's a, you know, a lack of that sort of crew leader level in so many businesses. But also as a part of growth and as a function, we need businesses to get to the place where they have good field managers. And so a field person to a crew leader to a field manager, you know, I need a field person to be really comfortable understanding the tools that they need for the day. I need them to be good at sort of self-planning. I talked about time management, right? Yep. Self-planning and self-accountability. I need them to have a base level of customer service. I need for them to be able to, you know, explain a problem well, but maybe not get to the solution. Then with a crew leader, I need somebody who is problem solving, who is able to take that problem that the field person had and help them to outline how they would go about solving it. I also, at that level, we got to get engaged in some conflict management. Right?
Oh, yes.
Right? With the two people from different cultures on the job site who get into a, you know, spitting match on, you know, like,
whatever it may be.
Right. Taylor Swift. Right? So, you know, you need a crew leader who's going to be conflict, able to handle that conflict, that they're good at that.
Only you would be able to pull Taylor Swift into a conversation related to leadership in the trades.
Right.
Well done.
Right. And then at a field manager level, so now, again, we're sort of building on these skills. I want a field manager to be good at change management. You know, we've got a person who can understand their time management and the tools that are necessary. We've got a crew leader who's maybe doing some conflict management and problem solving with a little bit of challenges. Now I need a field manager who's good at change management, because change management is the client calls up and says, I can't have you come to my house today, my basement flooded. Or, you know, you had a van get a flat tire on the way into work and, you know, they ran off the road and it's going to take a while to get them out. So change management. So I want those skills to build, but we can't have a person in a field management role who's incapable of change management. So if you've got a crew leader who's really good at conflict resolution and who can absolutely 100% solve today's problems and tomorrow's problems, but cannot manage the constant state of change that happens in a field manager's world, they're likely not going to get, they're not going to be good at it. Don't put them there then.
Yeah. And the goal, the bigger picture goal here is that the reason we do, part of what we do all of this is, so often the business owner in a lot of these cases is the one where all the problems are coming up to. The change issues. Well, you know, how are we going to do this? And they're looking to delegate, to be able to step away,
right,
and not have to be involved in that day-to-day because they're focused on other parts of the business. And so if we can't get our people to that level, your business is not going to grow.
It's not. And, you know, I think, you know, the next piece of this is the idea of some people aren't going to make it. You know, the situations that I've described to you, or the plan is that, you know, you hire lots of people and all of them want to work for you and all of them wanted to get developed and everybody's going to be in the role that you decided.
The ideal world that we live in.
I love it. I love it. It's fantasy.
Yeah.
But not everybody makes it. And, you know, this then does become the responsibility of the business owner to have the hard conversations and to say, listen, we've given you all the opportunities. I've worked with you. We've done an individual development plan. We've given you projects. This maybe isn't going to be the right fit for you. And how well you have that conversation determines if that person can stay in the role that they're in. And so practice it. You know, don't be afraid to have those hard conversations with people, because ultimately, you know, if I look at the values quadrant, people who are good at their jobs and are a values match, you want to hold on to them. And so don't make the conversation about how they're maybe not going to get that next role, don't handle it poorly and lose that. You know, you want to handle it well. So
at the end of the day, it comes back to talking to your people.
It does.
Understanding what it is that they want. And on the flip side, you know, those who are coming into these businesses, talk to your managers. Make sure you're having those one-on-one conversations. Make sure that you feel like you have a good relationship. If you don't have a good relationship with your manager, it's a whole other story. Maybe there's a bigger issue there.
Yeah.
Again, you know, people leave because they don't have a good relationship with their boss. That's one of the biggest reasons why people change companies, is because they don't respect their management.
Right.
And so let's work to avoid that, but let's seek to understand maybe why that situation is. And I will say, I have had the pleasure of talking to a lot of business owners in the last several months who are, you know, interested in working with us. And there's such a pattern with all of these business owners, and it's that they want to develop their people.
Oh yeah.
They don't have the ability to be the coach to everybody. And they're looking for tools, they're looking for trainings, because they realize that to grow, their people need to grow with them.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, we do individual development plans. You mentioned that earlier. I mean, we do individual development plans. We have people on our team who can work one-on-one with people on your team. And that can be a pretty good option for people, because you do. I mean, we're recording this in February. You know, in so many of the businesses, there's a seasonality, a transition time where you go from being maybe a little bit more subdued to just being busy, and that's coming up. We can help with that. Don't allow the busyness of a season to get in the way of developing your people, because your people are what are going to propel you to the next level.
They are.
Cash helps, but people.
Yes, cash always helps. Of course, if the things that are being, you know, spoken here resonate with you, please reach out. We'd be happy to have a conversation. This is, obviously, we're passionate about people. We coach. It's what we do. So if you're looking for a coach, or you're looking for someone to coach your people, let's have a conversation, because at the end of the day, we want to see this industry continue to develop, to be able to pull in great individuals from other industries who don't maybe know about working in the trades and know that there's so much potential here.
Right.
So we're always here. Our coaches are always available.
Yep, we are.
Catherine, thank you so much. Appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, Molly.
You're a great person to have this conversation with, because the passion certainly resonates.
Oh, yeah.
So until next time.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Out of the Hourglass is recorded and produced by the team at Nolan Consulting Group, a nationwide business coaching and consulting firm with coaches located throughout the country. Have a question, comment, or idea for future episodes? We'd love to hear from you. Visit our website, www.nolancg.com.